Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
It's been a week, hasn't it?
You're telling me.
So much going on.
So much is happening. It's very busy.
It's very busy. We collaborated on something that... So we're recording this, as always, under the supervision of our master, Kalendar, who, the scheduling god. Just before, a couple hours before, Relay FM kicks off their podcast-a-thon, and if you don't know about this, they're gonna the Relay Boys with a lot of special guests are gonna be on a telethon basically for St. Jude starting at 11 Pacific, which is 2 Eastern, and they're gonna go for 6 hours on Twitch. I think it's twitch.com/RelayFM, I think, or twitch.tv/RelayFM. I don't know, it'll get you there. And but you should go to Relay or stjude.org/relay is the donation if you haven't donated yet. Today would be a great day to donate. Great organization, helps kids with cancer, gives them free medical treatment, and does research, and it's an amazing story. And I mention all of this just to say that one of the many things that happened this week is, Dan, you and I collaborated on a couple of segments that will appear in the podcast-a-thon. About 40 minutes of that many, many hours of content is us. Six hours of content. We're 40 minutes of it, which is pretty good.
That's pretty good, ratio-wise.
We're pitching in. If it's anything like last time, where last time it was different because it was in person at the St. Jude Studios, and now it's all virtual, of course. But our game show, the Relay Family Feud thing that we did last year, that provided Mike and Steven with valuable breaks from doing 6 hours on the air. And so this time we're providing them with essentially 2 20-minute breaks. And I feel like in addition to doing our part to help, we're also, St. Jude, we're doing our part to help Mike and Steven stay alive. So
it's important.
Anyway, thank you for your help with that, because you were front and center with me on that show that we did. So, and along with, and I think we have like 7 special guests in that too.
There's
so
a lot.
We're moving through a lot of people who otherwise wouldn't have been on the podcast-a-thon. So we got like 9 or 10 Relay FM faces on that would not otherwise have been on.
I think it's interesting too to do, I mean, you and I have done a lot of Total Party Kill, which is a video show.
Right.
But this was something that we did on video, I think, that was more involved than any TPK episode we've done. And probably, I don't know about you, you and Steven have obviously been doing the 20 Mac stuff, but I feel like this was even more involved than, because it wasn't quite a live show where it's like you just kind of wave your hands and go like, hey, you know, it's a live show. What we record is what we end up with, and that is that. This was a little bit more produced and a little bit more moving pieces. And I noticed one thing I was thinking about as watching it is thinking like, I am so much more critical of myself watching myself in this show that's more heavily produced in terms of like what I'm doing when I'm not, you know, the focus on camera.
Just
like looking at all this stuff like, oh God, why am I looking over there? What am I doing? What am I, why am I?
That actually happens a lot in 20 Max where I do the edits and I send them to Steven, because for the 20 Max videos, Steven and I collaborated on recording the videos and getting the images, but I do all the production work. And I produce these draft versions and send them to Steven, and then his notes are, he has some helpful notes about this was a bad edit, this should be different, but most of his notes are, can you cut away from me here because I am doing something stupid? And it's just, you don't know when you're on camera.
I fidget all the time.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. But I think it turned out, it was definitely...
Yeah, it looks great.
It was I would say the production of it was not, in some ways, not any more involved than any of the videos that we've done for things like Family Feud or all the D&D videos we do for The Incomparable, with the exception of the fact that I had to... there were pre-recorded bits the week before that are then edited together and then rolled into the final thing, which then is edited, right? And that extra layer, it was many hours of work is what I'm saying. So I hope people appreciate it. I thought it was really fun. And
it was exciting to do, and I'm looking forward to seeing the reaction to it.
Yeah. And if you can't make the podcast-a-thon or you missed it, it'll be up on Relay FM's YouTube page at some point as well. The whole thing and our thing. So
I am in the process of, I think I complained to you earlier in the week, so we've been doing all these birthday videos in my family. And my cousin has been editing them, and now it's her birthday. So I've been helping her a little bit with some stuff, but I, as the next most capable person, I think I've sort of taken on the onus of doing her birthday video. And so it's basically like everybody in the family records little clips, and then I splice them all together. But, you know, you try to add a little pizzazz.
Sure.
You try to zhuzh it up a little bit. And I am definitely... I'm just using iMovie because I'm like, that's what I've got. I don't have Final Cut Pro. Final Cut Pro is totally overkill for doing what is probably a 10-minute video. But I did used to do video editing in like high school and college a bit. And I'm quickly running up, I think, against iMovie's. It's got some limits and it feels like it has some performance issues. Like, I'm running a 2017 5K iMac. It is a very capable machine that I do, you know, audio editing on all the time. And I'm getting like constant beach balls in iMac and in iMovie.
Yeah,
I don't know. I don't know what your problem is. This is not intensive. This is not an extremely complicated video. I'm just putting a bunch of clips in and cutting between them. What's your deal? So that's frustrating me a little bit because I mean, you know, they've improved iMovie over the years, but I think in some ways it still feels very alien to me in a way that I think even using Final Cut Pro, because I started out using Premiere for a bunch of stuff, I think it would feel more on a continuum with that, like certainly more complex than a lot of stuff that I'm doing. But I also use Logic a lot too, right? So I think the language there would be more understandable. iMovie is kind of its own weird beast.
Yeah, I mean, iMovie has, my recollection, I haven't used iMovie in a while, is that it has a lot in common with Final Cut Pro, but I have been using Final Cut Pro now for so long that I don't actually know the current state of affairs. And it's one of those things where, like, I just, for a project that is basically on hold because I've been doing all these other projects, I spent a few weeks building all these videos about how to edit podcasts in GarageBand. So I spent some time in GarageBand, and GarageBand is funny because GarageBand is basically Logic Lite, essentially, is what it is. But I haven't been in iMovie in a while, and I don't know how much of it is Final Cut Pro Lite versus something, you know, weird and different. But it's too bad. It's too bad. I've had some performance problems this week with video editing, but it's mostly been because of Big Sur, I think.
Yeah, I'm not even on Big Sur for this.
The last Big Sur beta was really bad. This new one seems better. The last one was really bad. Like, Safari wouldn't play video and stuff. Like, it was really bad. But this one's better. Speaking of which, so that's the operating system that didn't come out this week. But iOS 14, iPadOS 14, watchOS 7 did come out this week. Surprise, they dropped it and out it went yesterday or 2 days ago, 2 days ago now. So boom, we live in that world. I don't have anything queued up and ready to go. I did get an email from somebody at Apple who's like, hey, you have a, you know, iPadOS, iOS review coming? I said, probably sometime. I'm like, seriously, not on my list. I mean, just put it together. I actually took my first look of iOS 14 and put it in a new document with a bunch of marks of like revisiting it now that I have spent the summer. But that's literally as far as I've gotten because there's so much else going on.
Yes, I hear you. Same thing for me writing about iPadOS. I had the moment of thinking like, I mean, Don't cry too much for us. We didn't have the 24-hour notice to, you know, update our entire apps.
Yes.
So
right.
It could have been worse.
No
but,
Xcode.
Yeah, exactly. So I feel like, well, you know what? You gave only 24 hours notice. I definitely didn't have anything ready to go. And you know what? It's going to be a little bit. It's going to be a little bit. I don't feel a need that the world needs another, you know, knee-jerk reaction about iOS, iPadOS 14 right now. We'll give you a little bit.
I thought, so John Gruber posted his Apple Watch review.
I'm about halfway through it because I'm still creeped. I got distracted being creeped out by how they knew his wrist size.
Yeah, well, Apple knows everything. I very rarely am on the Apple Watch review program. I didn't get the first one. I didn't get this one. I've occasionally gotten them, and I think I mostly get them because they bring me, it's happened where they brought me down to Cupertino for like an iPhone briefing. And like once you're there, they put you through the whole briefing thing and they put you through the watch briefing too. But like I've never really been on the radar of the Apple Watch people. So I don't have a Series 6. I'm not planning on getting one. So I'm not too worried about it. And the reason I'm not too worried about it is reading John's review. You know, it's a little inside baseball of like when you're a reviewer of products and then you read a product review and you're like, why did the reviewer choose this direction? I think it's fascinating that John's piece is entirely about colors. And bands. And here's the thing. It happened the moment that that we were watching the video on Tuesday at the Apple event. I think you and I were both live tweeting. I did a little, you did a lot. Thank you for that. A true sign, and again, most people buying a Series 6 are not going to be coming from a Series 5. They're going to be coming from nothing or mm-hmm. from a much older watch. But the truest sign that Apple is trying to kind of pour in stuff in order to make this update seem substantial is the fact that this is the one that's got like all the colors and two new band styles. But the colors especially, I just had that moment of like, you know, it's feeling a little light. What else can we do with this release? How about blue and red? And so they did. And again, it's not, it looks like it's a great watch. And if I didn't have a Series 5, I would buy it because yep. I really like my Apple Watch. I was ironically running yesterday, and I run, as I've said here before, just my Apple Watch and my AirPods and no iPhone or anything like that. And I'm listening to podcasts and doing my activity tracking straight from my Apple Watch. Ironically, listening to a podcast where Steven and Mike were talking about how they don't care so much about the Apple Watch and won't be buying a new Apple Watch, which I thought was very funny. The irony, because I'm on the Apple Watch. And I do that all the time when I listen to ATP while I'm running. And Marco talks about how nobody uses the Apple Watch for listening to podcasts while I'm doing that. So
need that feature where you can shout back at him while you're listening.
But the truth is, it's not, and it doesn't have to be, but like John Gruber's review is super telling, because what's interesting about this is kind of the fashion of it. Because the rest of it, the O2 sensor thing is interesting, but as I linked to it yesterday from The Verge, it is a wellness feature. And the reason Mike had this big reaction on Tuesday when we did our second upgrade of the week, it's been a week, he was like, I don't even know what the oxygen thing is for. And I said, well, I know what it's for because like my dad was in the hospital and he had emphysema, and like I get it. And I've read the stories about COVID and having people who didn't know they had pneumonia, but it turned out that their oxygen levels were low, but they didn't know. But Apple didn't make the case for it. And the reason is because Apple can't legally make the case for it as a medical device, because it's not authorized to be a medical device. It's not proven to be effective as a medical device. So it's just a wellness feature. It's just there, which is not, you know, I don't know whether they originally intended it to be more and it didn't work out or what. But, you know, again, not bad. Looks pretty good. I'm kind of a believer in the Apple Watch now, but this was a modest update, so it's not surprising that John is talking about the bands and the color choices and what that shade of graphite in the stainless steel model is. To be fair, my response to it was, ooh, blue. Like, if I bought an Apple Watch Series 6, it would literally be so I could get a blue anodized watch. That would be my motivator. It's like, oh, you color. Know,
and I'm as attractive as that is for me, I the more I started to think about it, the more I was like, but then, I mean, then everything you wear always kind of, I feel like, has to go with blue.
Yeah.
there's an advantage to the neutral colors that they kind of go with everything.
I've been space gray the whole way, and I really like it because I can accessorize it with bands if I choose. I actually changed bands yesterday, and it's like, oh, it's like I got a whole new watch, but the black frame of it remains.
Yeah. So, I mean, for me, I'm on a Series 4, and so I did not, you know, I didn't upgrade for the always on display last year, tempted as I was, but it didn't seem like, you know, I'm not going to switch a watch out after a year.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit tempted this year because I did the math and like the trade in on the 4 is pretty good. And so it's like $140. And, you know, you take that off the price of a 44 millimeter Series 6 and it comes down to just a little over what the SE, the Apple Watch SE costs. And it's like, oh, that's not terrible. But at the same time, I'm perfectly happy with the Series 4. The idea of the always on display appeals to me. I certainly want one, but I also know, and I think I said this somewhere else this week, like any watch I buy in the future will have that. So there's no need to upgrade right now.
No.
And honestly, I went from the 0 to the 4.
Right.
And that was a huge update.
Yeah, so that's
it. So I mean, kind of feel like
you've got a buying cycle, and it's not two years or
it's
one
not
year.
2 years. It's probably
and that's fine.
3 years.
And that's the case. I mean, like they cart this out. I thought it was funny on Tuesday that they carted out a stat that they usually cart out in the analyst calls, which is percent new to product. And the point that they're making, because they don't make this stuff up, like the point that they're making is we get very focused on like what is this versus the last model? Because that's sort of the way, the measuring stick. I will defend that practice in, to the point where it's a measuring stick of the trajectory, the velocity of Apple's advancement. And so comparing it to the last one of this lets you see sort of like what is new, because that was known, this is not known, and now we know the difference. But the truth is that not only are people not buying a new one of, most people are not buying a new one of anything every year, but as Tim Cook pointed out with one of these stats, more than half of the iPad purchases they get are people who didn't have an iPad before, even now, right? And that shows you that the buying cycle is lengthened, because there are a lot of iPad users out there and they are buying new iPads every few years. Right. But even so, they are more of them are going to people who have never bought an iPad before. So it's just, and the Apple Watch is like that too. I think the number of people who are potentially future owners of an Apple Watch vastly outweighs the number of people who are upgrading from an existing Apple Watch.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I think Apple, well, so this actually raises a couple other questions for me, which is what, and I talked about this a little bit in advance of this event this week, but I'm not sure what the future trajectory of the Apple Watch is, because it's entirely possible that they could, you know, think, well, we're going to keep, you know, improving the silicon, we're going to keep improving the display, and we're going to, you know, add some other sensors and features as we kind of determine that they're feasible. But I think there is a, you know, diminishing returns, I think, right, is the risk, is that the, and you point out very well, as The Verge did, when you're talking about a device that's about wellness, rather than being a medical device, you're going to hit an upper ceiling at some point, right? Because like a lot of people have thought, like we saw people speculating before the event, like, oh, maybe they'll finally do, you know, like a, you know, a glucose monitor or something. It's like, first of all, I'm not sure that's technologically possible.
Well, It's
difficult.
It is, but not, I mean, they do exist, but they exist as standalone devices that you attach elsewhere, and not, it's not
going to, right. I'm not sure that's possible in a watch. My point. And then moreover, that is almost definitely a medical device.
Yeah.
Can you get away with saying it's not? Like, so
a lot of the stuff is going to be, you know, and is already, but is going to continue to be basically Bluetooth accessories that talk to the watch and
sure,
that the watch controls,
and that's fine. But I think the question is the trajectory for the main watch.
Yeah.
Is like, at some point do you have to give in and say like, look, we've got to like get this approved by the FDA so that we can actually market it as a medical device? That's one option. They could go that way. It presents a lot of challenges.
I think that's I see them having that as one of their tracks, though, is like,
yes,
as a medical device, what are we capable of doing that's capable of being approved inside the watch versus just applying compatibility or selling? I mean, theoretically, Apple could sell their own accessories that do these things, but it's more likely that those would come from other companies that have gone through all the medical approvals. But like, that's one track. And then obviously fitness is a track where they're going to continue to think, like Apple Fitness Plus, okay, also announced this week, is currently a device that uses your Apple Watch as the sensor, but you, mm-hmm, you watch the classes on an iPhone or an iPad or an Apple TV.
Yep.
And I was talking about Peloton because people were kind of taking shots at Peloton. And what I didn't mention on Upgrade, that when I was talking about Peloton, because I didn't know, I haven't been paying attention that close to Peloton. I'm not a Peloton user or owner or anything, is that they are, in addition to their core business, which is selling bikes with software and services, they have some like kind of free play digital classes now.
Yep.
And those are a direct competitor to Apple. So like, just game on. We'll see who benefits there. But I think what's interesting is that there's also like Nike that has the Nike Run Club and stuff like that.
Which I thought, and they also have the Nike Fitness Club, which also does fitness, basically the exact same thing. I happen to be doing one of those like workouts with my wife just the other week.
And those are, I think, free now, because
there's a free tier, certainly.
Yeah.
There might be more stuff you can pay for, but it's interesting too, because they are partners in a lot of places too.
Right.
And yet now they are also competitors.
Maybe, you know, we'll see. They may be partners.
Maybe there's more synergy happening there too.
Yeah. My point here is like, that's a path forward for the Apple Watch too, because one of the things that they absolutely haven't done is integrate on outside the home on the go training now. Fitness Plus is not starting out with that. Fitness Plus is in your home or in the gym on equipment. That's what Fitness Plus is right now. So that's a clear path for the Apple Watch, which is all the things that other people are doing, but that Apple isn't doing yet in terms of training, where you're going for a run or a walk or a jog or a bike ride or whatever, and building programs in for that into Apple Fitness Plus and into the Apple Watch. So they've got plenty, you know, they've got all of that. And then they've got, in terms of the trajectory for the watch, the other one that's interesting, and this is a really great column, so either you or I have to write this for Macworld at some point, because this is, I wrote it down, like, this is a good column idea, Dan, just behind the scenes. This is a good column idea. Is the technological advancement, which is more battery life, or same battery life in less battery, so you can be thinner and lighter.
Yep.
And I think ultimately, because it's been 6 years, we will always know exactly when the Apple Watch was introduced, because that was the next to last day of our jobs. the big thing is, I talk about color. Well, style and design is part of it, right? Like, the other way you can iterate and offer more options is to offer more styles. And we've only ever had one Apple Watch style over all these 6 years. So I got to think that that's another direction. I feel like we're at the point now where I kind of don't think classic Apple Watch design is going to go away, but it wouldn't surprise me if Apple's got like another design that they throw out there. Because if you think like adding blue and red watches is something that's going to, because of the fashion component of all this, it's going to drive some sales and make the product interesting. Offering a different design variation certainly could do that too. And that I wouldn't be surprised if they do that. And then there's the fitness band thing.
I guess there are a lot of questions, I think, for me in terms of, because I think those are all great selling points, but what they're certainly diversifying what the Apple Watch is about, right? Like, I mean, and it's always been about style. It's always been about fitness and health to a certain degree, and communications and stuff like that. But it does feel that, like, on a technological standpoint, what they're doing is just racing the curve for like performance and battery at this point, rather than there being a ton of additional features that need to be added in. Like, they will improve stuff. I'm sure they will come up with stuff that we are not thinking of right now in terms of, like, you know, new features that can be enabled on it. But it does feel like, to a certain degree, the curve has flattened a little bit in terms of, you know, providing things that are compelling upgrades. And maybe that's fine, right? Like, maybe, again, like you said, we discussed, if they're assuming most people aren't buying a watch every year, and that you buy your watch every 2 or 3 years, and therefore you're getting a more significant upgrade, then maybe that's fine if they only are sort of rolling out incremental stuff. But then when you look at it from a 2 or 3 year perspective, you're like, oh, well, it's got this and this and this. Like, that seems like a worthwhile time to upgrade, maybe. But it does feel like, after adding the always-on display, I have a harder time figuring, like, what does my Apple Watch not do that I want it to do? And, you know, a lot of that is software. A lot of it is stuff where it's like, oh, maybe when it, you know, now it runs shortcuts, right? Like, that's a great example of something that was enabled in software. It wasn't a hardware requirement, but, like, certainly things will get better and better. I don't know. It's the device that I have a lot of interest in, because I'm just curious as to how far they can take it.
Right. Well, it's fascinating, right? Because it is this thing that has been, by all accounts, successful.
Yeah.
And growing. And has a lot of space, right? It's that empty space where from here it can go lots of places. And that's fascinating, right? This is a product that, I don't know, maybe more than any other Apple product that currently exists, it feels like it has lots of different iterations and variations and different directions it could go in a way that... It's not fully formed yet, and there's more space for it to evolve.
It's the Apple product, and I'm going to be a little harsh here, and I know people will get a little upset about it, but it's the Apple product that no one needs, right? Like, an iPhone, I think these days, if you are without a smartphone, it's hard to get by, right? Like, in at least, you know, in the U.S., in, like, you know, those sort of markets and stuff like that, A smartphone is kind of a lifeline, right? You do a lot of your life on a smartphone these days, for better or worse. An iPad, like, I think an iPad is a very compelling, essentially, computing device for a lot of people. Similarly with a Mac, like, those are things that I think, you know, you can make strong arguments for people needing those. I'm not sure anybody needs an Apple Watch.
Sure.
There are people who benefit from an Apple Watch, but I am not sure it is more than any other Apple device, it is a luxury device. It is something that you are buying because you want it, not probably something you are buying because you need.
And I think,
I think that's
related. I think those are connected, right? Because part of the reason that there's all this white space, this blank space, where it could go, is that it is of limited appeal right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it, Apple is following these tracks of like, where does it have more appeal? And you see it where like, one of the things that struck me, they talked about this Apple Watch family setup thing. And it's very clear where that feature came from. That feature came because I lived it, and there are a lot of parents at Apple who lived it, which is you get to the point where your kid is independent enough that you'd like to track them and be able to communicate with them using modern technology. And you're like, do I really want to give my sixth grader a smartphone? Like, there's the expense of it, of the service, and the price of the phone, and even if you roll down an old phone, but at the same time, it's got like Find My, and it's got like, I get the whole premise there. And Marco talked about this on ATP this week too, I think. The family thing, the whole premise there is that you just get your kid an Apple Watch, and then your kid can make calls to like the people you control, and you can see where they are. They can call home, you can call them, you can text them, and it's a way. It solves that issue without having to get them a whole smartphone. And then they mentioned older members of your family too, which I thought was funny, because one of the other areas where the Apple Watch is starting to come into its own is with seniors. I read this article, I don't remember where it was, that basically said the Apple Watch is the best thing ever for seniors because it's a product that does things like you can find somebody who's wandered away and they don't know where they are. You can reach people directly. It can give you medical alerts, which is great. But it also has like the fall detection and the emergency calls and all that. And there are products that do that for seniors, but they're ugly and they're embarrassing, is what this story basically said.
Life alert.
Yeah, whatever, you don't want to wear a pendant with a big push button on it and it's I've fallen and I can't get up and all of that, right? But you give them a super cool Apple Watch and you let them pick the color and all of that, and then they're safe, but they also feel good about it and they wear it. And that's, again, a path, but there are going to be lots of these. And that's part of the challenge of Apple Watch is lots of people don't have it. That's great. That's an opportunity, but how do you get them to want it and need it and feel that it's worth buying? And that's what's fascinating about, as you point out quite rightly, is that Apple has a challenge with that product that they don't have with other products. I find that fascinating. And it goes to the debate about whether they should make a fitness band, which, you know, argument against is it's undercutting Apple Watch sales at the low end. And a fitness band wouldn't have like fully fledged, wouldn't have apps and stuff. It would be something that would sync with your iPhone and maybe show you the time and some basic stats, but it wouldn't be a big Apple Watch. Then again, you might reach an audience who will never buy an Apple Watch, or who doesn't, or who likes their watch that they've got. Like, we both know people. Scott McNulty's a good example of this. We know people who don't really like the Apple Watch as a fitness device, or like Mike Hurley, who prefers to wear a watch that is a nice, you know, mechanical watch. And you could get access to that market by saying this isn't a watch. You know, if you just want to track your workouts and sync it to your Apple Health stuff, and you know, it would work presumably with Apple Fitness Plus, which is actually another argument for something like this, then that might be a product direction they go. You know, would there be a $99 or $129 Apple Fitness Band that is not an Apple Watch, even though it kind of is, but it kind of isn't. So lots of empty space for them. That's why it's such a fun, unlike something like the VR and AR glasses, where it's just completely just like, I don't know, is that anything ever? This one, it's a product that's existed for 6 years and yet is in a category that is so new that there's just, you know, lots of empty space out there. I love it. That's why it's so fascinating to watch them.
It's interesting.
Iterate with it. Yeah, exactly.
It's a lot happening. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything else hit you from the 1 hour Apple video event?
The bundle. Expected. We all thought that was coming eventually. And the name, of course, got leaked ahead of time. I think it's interesting. I think it feels like it is not 100% there yet, but I can understand exactly how they're marketing it and who it's going to appeal to and where they're trying to make their additional money off of it, essentially. Because even though there are definitely monetary benefits to buying some of these plans, like it does save you money, it's an interesting proposition when, you know, I think the struggle is a lot of this stuff feels like potentially saving you money, but also potentially just giving you things that maybe you don't want.
Right.
So are you really saving money or are you just getting something at a discount that was not something you would have bought in the first place?
Yeah, that's the trick.
That is the trick here because, and I think Apple News Plus is the most egregious example of that, which is it is not, and I did get one email from a reader this week who was particularly vociferous in defending it. Not like, not lethally, but he's like, oh, I actually really like it. Like, I wish more people liked it, and I wish, you know, that people were more, you know, excited about it. I was like, that's great. I'm glad that people out there do like it, but I think that it's certainly not caught on, and you can't argue with that. It has not become Apple's super popular, successful service.
No.
There's a lot of reasons why. We've talked about a lot of them in the past, but I think it's telling that it's, you know, shoved in at the top end of the bundle for that reason. Fitness Plus too is kind of an interesting thing because, as we just talked about, like, I think it's unproven territory for Apple. I think it's interesting for them to try it. I have no idea whether or not that's going to prove to be successful. I suspect they will get at least a moderate amount of success out of it.
I think
that's my feeling. But you know, it that seems more compelling than some of the other stuff. Apple Arcade, I think, has gotten really divisive. You know, people were very positive about it when it launched. I think some of that enthusiasm has waned over the last year.
You've described me. I think they had some strong launch things, and then over time, they have not really provided.
Same. I unsubscribed it. I canceled my subscription because I wasn't using it.
I'm very close to that point. I think there may be people in my family who are using some of those games, and I haven't yet done a survey, and so I don't want to sweep it out from under them, but I've definitely had that same feeling now. And there are those reports about how they've been like canceling games and doing things. I think we're in the lull now from what they launched with to get it all going that they thought would be the way the service would roll, and then realizing how the service actually works and having to change their tactics. But they've kind of lost the plot in the last 6 months, I think.
So the real questions are, so Apple Music, which I think is perfectly solid,
sure,
and you know, certainly getting some of these the mid-range bundle and the family bundle and the individual bundle, where it's like you get Apple Music, you get some iCloud storage, it's at a deal. It's like, all right, that's fairly compelling. I think the challenge for a lot of us is some of us already use more storage than that, and you can buy more, you can add it on. It's a little, I'm still not entirely clear. I don't know if you've looked at it like in terms of how that works, because I've heard that you can add, if you have like the Premier plan and it gives you 2 terabytes of storage, that you can still pay for an additional 2 terabytes on top of that. I assume it just means in all of these cases, you would add on that plan, whatever plan for more storage at the normal price.
Yeah, you add another iCloud, storage plan on top of your bundle plan.
So let's talk about iCloud storage for a second, just because this is, I think, it's the most egregious thing Apple does to me to a consumer-facing perspective. I'm going to leave aside their relationships with developers, which obviously are very contentious, and there's a lot of stuff in there. But from a consumer perspective, I feel like iCloud storage is just it's a scam.
Yeah. Yep.
It feels cheap. And that's my biggest problem with it.
My feeling is that it's all fine except for the numbers, right? Like, that's the problem.
Yeah,
is that there isn't enough, there aren't enough tiers and or the numbers are wrong. Like 50, yeah. 5 should be 50 or 10 maybe, but 5 should be 50, 50 should be 100, 200 should be 500, and 2 terabytes should be 3 or 4 terabytes. That's what it should be.
Yeah.
And most people won't use that data anyway. And then the prices would be more competitive because
Not even terrible. I mean, I pay $3 a month for the 200 gigabytes or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's fine,
but
it is not as granular as one would hope. And more to the point, I think that it's just the free tier is too small.
Yeah.
And
right.
Nobody 5 gigabytes is not a useful amount of space for most people. And somebody somewhere suggested the other day, I think I retweeted it, don't remember who it was suggesting like, hey, what if you just made backups free? And I was like, that would be great. That would save a lot of people time. And, and honestly, I think, and I've made this point for years, I feel like it is a good message to send to your customers, like in the sense that it's like, we care about you and keeping your products and your data secure. That's why we offer free backup for all of your devices. And it's like, I understand it takes up space. It costs money. But it's not like they can't afford it. And it's not like storage isn't.
It's not like they aren't making money on all of those devices that they sell
anyway. And
they'll
still upsell you on some stuff. But if you made it free, the goodwill gesture of it, I think, is huge because it says, I mean, not only that, but like, doesn't it really start solving that problem of people coming to the Genius Bar and saying, like, I'm out of storage in iCloud, or I lost my photos because they couldn't get backed up, right? Like, this solves so many problems for you.
I'm not, well, photos is an issue where they're going to have to, you're going to have to pay if you really want to see a lot of photos.
That's probably true. But
it shouldn't be that. My mom was actually telling me last week, and she's like, why do I have this thing from Apple where I had to change my credit card because they're billing me 99 cents a month? And I was like, oh boy. It's like, because I need you. And I said, it's because you were complaining about how it kept telling you couldn't back up your phone and your iPad.
I did the same thing with
aunt. And so to solve that problem, you now have this dumb 99 cent a month charge from Apple, which shouldn't, and I'm sitting there thinking to myself, which shouldn't be there because you should get more space than that. And I realized I should just put her on my family plan because she's just backing up an iPhone and an iPad. It doesn't matter.
Right.
And I could add her to my family plan and it would be fine. But it's
amount
frustrating.
Of positive PR you could get out of that.
So here's,
if you spun it.
Here's the thing: the Premier plan, which is only available in some markets. Like, I did the math about what services I do actually pay for, and like basically the Premier plan will save me money, and will give me some stuff for free. And if you think about the fact that although I don't love Apple Arcade right now, I am shortly going to be paying $5 more for Apple TV Plus, which is a service I like and I intend to keep regardless. At that point, that's $30 that I'm paying. And for that same $30, because I'm also paying for the 2 terabytes and all that, for that same $30, I'm going to get Apple Arcade for free. I'm going to get Apple News Plus for free. And News Plus, I wrote about this. There's a members-only post. I wrote it yesterday on Six Colors. You can read about it. Apple News Plus is not a service I want, and it's not a service I like, but having had it for a month as a trial this summer, I'll tell you, I actually came to appreciate it mostly because of that new feature where if it's a News Plus partner, it intercepts web links and puts them in Apple News instead. And hijacking links is not my favorite thing, but I'll tell you, hijacking a link that goes to a page on a website that says, this is a paywall, and being able to just not just see the story in Apple News instead, that's kind of great. Like, it becomes, I think Apple News Plus maybe for me is a better service as a paywall opener, automatic paywall opener than anything else. So great. Anyway, but you know, and fitness throws in there too. So the truth is, like, you only need to want three things if you're in a country that has Premier. And it's going to start being worth it to you. But that's the challenge is, like, first off, you got to be all in on Apple Music. You really should probably be paying for iCloud anyway just to back up your devices. And then it's a question of, like, is there another Apple service that you're interested in? You know, is Apple TV worth it to you? Is Apple Arcade worth it to you? At that point, you've probably got a bundle deal. And the beauty is the bundles aren't the only way, right? If you only Brian Hamilton was saying to me earlier this week, he was like, but I don't want those things. I only want this one thing. It's like, well, good news. Apple's not going to stop selling individual plans, right? You could do that too. The bundles are just a way to kind of expose you to a broader array of Apple services. And I'm okay with that.
For me, it doesn't, none of them quite make sense at this point is the problem. Because if I really want, I mean, sure, I could pay $15 for the base plan and get Apple Music and Apple TV, both of which I'm shortly to be paying for. But I'm not going to get, I don't get any benefit from iCloud because I already have a bigger storage plan than that.
You have a 2 terabyte plan?
I have the 200 gigabyte plan. So
okay.
The individual only comes with 50.
Yeah, but what if you paid $15 a month? Is it $15 a month for
$15 a month.
For 20 for a family. So what if you pay 20? And then you've got your iCloud storage and Apple Music and Apple TV, and that includes your wife's stuff.
Well, then we get into a whole different kettle of fish because she's currently on her parents' family plan.
Oh no!
Yeah,
so we have plans.
Yeah, and honestly, I this is something I need to hash out.
You need to get on that plan, Dan.
Yeah, exactly. Oh man. So I mean, if And honestly, this is a thing that does come up because I need to figure out how this works. This is a funny thing that happens every once in a while. Is the other morning, I decided I'm going to walk down and buy us a couple donuts from the nice donut shop near our house. So I, you know, she gets up and she's puttering around in the kitchen. And I was like, all right, I'll be back in, you know, 15 minutes or something. So I go out and I'm walking and I, you know, start listening to music. We've had this happen before. My music just like pauses and I'm like, what's going on? I'm like, lost network connection. So I started again. 10 seconds later, pauses again. I'm like, what is and then I unlock my phone and it reminds me somebody is streaming Apple Music from another device on this account because the Sonos the kitchen is logged into my Apple Music account.
No.
So I was like, oh, well, this is stupid. Like, I can't. She, because it will just end up in this constant tug of war. So what I did was I put my phone into airplane mode and just played an album from my library. Mm. And it works fine. But it was annoying because I was playing something that was in my library. But because right. I downloaded it from Apple Music, it's like, nah, you can't play those at the same time. So that is ridiculous and makes me angry. A family plan might fix that, but then I have to just log into a separate account on the Sonos, presumably. I don't know.
Maybe not. So.
Does that count as a separate device? I don't know.
I don't know.
It might solve some problems. It might just not solve all the problems. So I'm right in the like a weird spot for this where it's like it almost makes sense to go to the family plan. But it doesn't quite save me money unless you consider the fact that, yes, I get Apple Arcade in there as well, which I don't currently have. But as we just discussed, I don't want it. If they had come out with this last year, I probably would have signed up for one of these things because it was all new. But now that these are all known quantities, it's like, well, I know exactly what I'm getting from Apple Arcade. Like last year, I would have signed up for it just to sign up for it and try it out. And then I would have been like, well, I have it and I've got the bundle. I might as well just keep it. Whereas now I unsubscribe for it. Now I save my $5 a month. So, yeah, I don't know. I think the fact that Apple is willing to make a competitive deal on their services bundle together is very smart. I think you'll have a lot of customers who are going to take them up on this. I do not think this is a losing proposition for Apple in any way. I think it's, you know, not a great proposition for me, but I'm one person. Apple is not going to cry over that. So I think what's also interesting about it is the ramp for the future, where these are not going to be the last services that Apple makes. So it's going to be interesting to see how future services get integrated into these plans, if at all.
Yep. We will see. Well, big week. Huge week. Thanks to everybody for supporting us. Go check out the Relay FM Podcast-a-thon and donate to St. Jude. And we'll be back next week with more because it just keeps on happening. Weeks just keep on happening. That's the magic of Calendar, I suppose. But until then, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.